All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am reviewing the All-22 from the Falcons' Week 5 loss to the Houston Texans, as well as answering your listener questions.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is a Q&A episode as well as an All-22 review. As this episode will go in segments 2 and 3, I will be answering your guys' questions that you sent in mostly via Twitter on today's episode. And I'll try to get through as many of those as I can. But the first part of this episode is going to be sort of my take on watching the All-22 from this Houston game. And if you didn't get to check out Wednesday's Week 6 preview episode, you missed me talking about the Falcons offense and some of the areas where I think they can get better, particularly facing this Arizona Cardinals team this upcoming week in Week 6. But one of the things I mentioned on that episode was I was going to devote a significant portion of today's podcast detailing some of the issues that I saw on film against this Houston Texans team. And let's jump right into that sort of as our Locked On Falcons lead story today. And the main topic I want to talk about is really focusing on sort of the big gashing plays that the Falcons gave up against the Texans in Week 5. You know, I looked at the 13 biggest plays that the Falcons gave up, with the exception of a 17-yarder at the end of the first half. And those 13 plays accounted for 364 of the Texans' 592 yards that they gained in that game, roughly 60%. On those 13 plays, if you do the math, the Texans wound up averaging 28 yards per play. And then on their other 54 offensive plays, they only averaged about 4.2. The NFL average, by the way, is about 5.5 yards per play. So you look at those 13 big plays that we're talking about, and three of those were run plays. There was a Carlos Hyde 14-yard run, a Deshaun Watson 30-yard scramble, and a Duke Johnson 24-yard gain. All of those came when the Falcons were playing man coverage, which, you know, essentially one of the downsides of playing man coverage is that if your front four or five, in this case, can't stop the run, then you're going to get gashed for huge gains because there's really only one defender on the back end that has his eye on the football. And that's, in the Falcons' case, Ricardo Allen, their free safety, who's typically playing, you know, 15 to 20 yards off, you know, downfield and off the ball. And so I think that's one of the downsides I've mentioned before when it comes to playing man coverage. Another one is the fact that your defense tends to run out of gas. We saw the Falcons in this Houston Texans game exclusively play man coverage on those final two drives. And they were able to give up a number of big plays and scores on those two drives. And one of the things I talked about in the preview episode of this Texans matchup was I just didn't think the Falcons had the players on the back end that could match up man-to-man against these Texans receivers. I think, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is obviously one of the best receivers in the league. Will Fuller, Kiki Kuti, these guys have too much speed that I didn't think the Falcons secondary could handle these guys. Now, when you look at those outside those three run plays, that means four out of their 10 passing plays that they gave up that I'm talking about on today's episode, you know, they also were playing man coverage. And, you know, two out of those four plays, it was simply a case of Isaiah Oliver getting beat. You know, one was the final touchdown that Desmond Trufant got beat by Will Fuller on a double move. And the Falcons were essentially playing cover zero. And for some reason, you know, decided while playing cover zero, which is notorious for bringing a lot of pressure and bringing 6 and 7 man pressures on cover zero, the Falcons didn't bring 5 rushers on that play, certainly not 6, you know, because I think they were worried about Watson scrambling. And, you know, they had Allen sort of drop into a middle zone, not playing that deep center field like he normally does when they play cover one. What the Falcons did, they wound up dropping Tack, McKinley, and Vic Beasley to sort of spy Deshaun Watson and prevent him from running for a first down on that 3rd and 5 call. But you need to have those guys rushing. And instead, I think the proper call in that situation would have had Allen spying Watson and bringing 5 pass rushers on that particular play. The Falcons wind up only rushing 3 on that play. Now, the 4th and last man play that they gave up was one where the Falcons brought a five-man pressure on that particular play, and it looked like Deion Jones was supposed to cover the tight end who was wide open in the flat, and it simply blew that assignment. You know, and that leaves about six plays where the Falcons got gashed via the zone. You know, the 44-yard touchdown to Will Fuller was clearly the fault of Isaiah Oliver, who wound up, instead of doing his zone cover three responsibilities and playing that deep third, which was where Fuller wound up attacking with his sort of over route, Oliver wound up sticking to DeAndre Hopkins and chasing him. And that play also happened to be a three-man rush as well. There were two other plays where the Falcons were playing zone and cover two defense. The bigger of those two was a 51-yarder to Kiki Kuti, where Deion Jones did not do enough to get his depth down the middle of the field. Typically, when you play cover two, you need that middle linebacker to drop and get deep so that he can cover the deep middle, which is the vulnerable part of that cover two between the two deep safeties. And Kiki Kuti wound up attacking that zone. Then you had a 16-yarder to Will Fuller that Isaiah Oliver was playing off coverage when the Falcons playing cover three and just didn't break on the ball quick enough to stop that. And then there was a 32-yarder to Will Fuller where Desmond Trufant was out of position playing cover three, and the Falcons wound up utilizing a mush rush on that particular play, which means really the interior guys weren't pinning their ears back to get after the quarterback. And again, it was in large part, in my opinion, due to the Falcons being fearful of Watson's ability as a running threat. And then the last play in terms of their zone coverage where the Falcons gave up a big play was a 29-yarder to DeAndre Hopkins, where basically the play action did an effective job holding the linebackers underneath. And then, you know, Hopkins slipped behind those guys, and then you wound up seeing Ricardo Allen, Deion Jones missing the tackle after the catch, and Hopkins was able to get additional yards there. So I think really when we look at the Falcons' defensive issues on this past Sunday, it's a multifaceted issues. I think first, you have too often you have players missing assignments. There are too often times, and we've seen that throughout the season, where guys are playing man while the rest of the defense is playing zone. You know, I think that's primarily on the players. You have to resolve that by communicating better and essentially guys not being stupid and playing their assignments. I think the second issue is you're not necessarily doing a great job scheming. And I think that's particularly when we're looking at these three-man rushes that the Falcons were throwing at the Texans. And I don't think the Falcons were really showed a good plan to handle Deshaun Watson's running ability. It was clear to me after that 30-yard scramble where Watson gashed the team, the Falcons' plan to sort of stop his ability to run was to basically rush three quarterbacks, but or three guys, and that gave Watson all the time in the world that he needed to pick apart this defense with their, you know, skillful wide receivers. And you really want to have more opportunities where Tack McKinley and Vic Beasley are not dropping in the coverage, but are pinning their ears back and getting after the quarterback. I think the third issue is the fact the Falcons are really struggling to manufacture pressure. You know, anytime they dialed up a blitz against the Texans were able to pick it apart. And most teams this season have been able to sort of see their blitzes coming from a mile away and attack those blitzes and gash the Falcons in that regard. The primary way that the Falcons have been able to blitz teams is by bringing basically a corner blitz, which I think is a very vanilla blitz, and the Falcons aren't doing a great job disguising those things. So I think the main issue the Falcons, if the defense is going to get back on track, they have to be able to affect the quarterback much better than they did against Houston and what they have done in previous games like against Tennessee and whatnot. You can't have Tack McKinley dropping into coverage. You know, people talked about back in 2017 that Vic Beasley was being misused by asking him to drop in the coverage, and that's one of the reasons why his production fell off. Obviously, now in 2019, people know better than that, and I would still argue to this day that I would argue that Vic Beasley's probably better in coverage than he is as a pure pass rusher. But I do think in one case, and certainly Tack McKinley's case, it is definitely misusing him by asking him to drop in the coverage instead of rushing the quarterback. And, you know, one of the things that people constantly are asking me on this podcast is like, is this Falcons defense, is the cover three defense that the Falcons use like broken? And I don't think it is. But when you look at the teams like San Francisco and Seattle and Jacksonville and the LA Chargers that are having success operating this scheme, this cover three heavy scheme that the Falcons are utilizing, you're seeing those teams have more success because they're able to get more effective pressure with their front four guys. And really, I think the key to this Falcons defense right now is mainly Tack McKinley, Adrian Claiborne, and Grady Jarrett, you need to get those top three guys who are your three main pass rusher guys. They have to be affecting the quarterback. And when they're not, you know, and I think Grady Jarrett was really the only guy in this particular game that was doing a good job. But we've seen quiet outings for Tack McKinley. We've seen quiet outings for Adrian Claiborne as well. And if you don't, if you only have one rather than all three of those guys operating at a high level, you're going to have troubles operating a scheme. And then on top of that, you really do need to see this team if and when you have future outings where those guys aren't really doing a great job affecting the quarterback. You need to be able to find ways to manufacture pressure via the blitz. And I think that's really been a problem with these vanilla blitzes. And that's why I've been critical on Twitter of these vanilla blitzers and these sort of standard vanilla slot corner blitzes. You know, quarterbacks are seeing that coming from a mile away. You have to be smarter with disguising your blitzes. I think one way that the Falcons can do that is by putting six or seven guys up on the line of scrimmage, utilizing that 3-4-5-2 front that the Falcons are deploying, and putting guys like Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell, lining those guys up in the A gap, stacking the line of scrimmage, and making teams have to guess, okay, all of these guys look like they're going to blitz, and which of the four, five, or six guys are actually going to come when it could possibly be six, seven, or eight of these guys potentially coming on these plays. And I think the Falcons have to vary that up and do a better job disguising that. And they have done a very poor job of that this season. And if they can do that, I think they will be able to find much greater success, you know, manufacturing pressure. You look at teams like Jacksonville, you look at teams like San Francisco, who do Seattle, that they do a much more effective job bringing extra rushers, bringing those linebackers, bringing those safeties on some of these blitzes and helping to manufacture additional pressure when their front four is not doing a good enough job. And so I want to see more of that from this Falcons defense. And if they can do that, then I think this defense have more opportunities where you're, or less opportunities where team guys are blowing assignments and you're having some of these mental breakdowns and miscommunications in on the back end, then you will see significant improvement from this Falcons defense. And so I think, you know, one of the things, you got to get rid of these three-man rushes. Pretty much my tip to Dan Quinn would be, anytime you feel compelled or, you know, want to rush three guys, that's an opportunity for you to bring six-man pressures and whatnot. So I felt like one of the things that Marquand Manuel did very effectively in the 2 years he was the defensive coordinator, in 2017 and 2018, was that he was much better at sort of disguising these pressures and being more effective manufacturing pressure. There's your Locked On Falcons lead story, and we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, answering some of your guys' questions on today's episode on a variety of topics. And certainly in the third segment, we'll focus extensively on sort of some of the coaching issues and the future of, you know, Dan Quinn and the potential next coaching candidates. But we'll answer some of your other questions on some differing topics in this next segment. But before we get there, I want to let you guys know that you should make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter the promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. So we're answering questions from you listeners on today's episode. You know, this segment, we're going to have a variety of different topics. Our first topic comes from at Third and Long on Twitter. He asks, if explosive plays are the key to the Falcons' offensive success, what is the key for their defensive success? Big plays aren't as correlative to giving up points on defense as they are, in my opinion, to correlative to scoring points on offense. But there is certainly a correlation. I don't think there's really one key stat or one thing that you can harp on with defense, like I often harp on explosive plays on offense. But, you know, the Pete Carroll coaching tree that Dan Quinn is a part of do tend to focus on six broad categories for judging defensive performance. And I think if you can generally rank well in the majority of these six categories, then you are truly a good defense. I think historically the Falcons have never really been able to rank highly in more than two of these categories, which is one of the reasons why for several years I thought the Falcons defense was overrated. But those six categories are red zone efficiency, third down efficiency, creating big plays, which in for defenses is getting takeaways and turnovers, not giving up a ton of big plays, run defense, stopping the run, and affecting the quarterback, whether that you factor that in through sacks and hits or pressures or whatever the case may be. And again, there's a variety of metrics that you can use to judge those six categories. But generally speaking, the better you fare across those six categories, the better your defense is going to be. But as far as big plays and explosive plays go, you know, that sort of further back up my whole idea of big plays equals points. That theory that I have, when you look at the eight drives that the Texans had with 20 plus yard plays this past week, they generated 47 points off of those drives. That was about 5.9 points per drive. You look at their three drives that did not include a 20 plus yard play, they had 0 points. Of course, their additional points came on a pick six, which you could count as a big play for the defense. The Falcons had four drives with 20 plus yard plays on, and they generated 24 points. That's about 6 points per drive. You look at the seven drives where they did not have a 20 plus yard play, they generated 8 points. And of course, that came on off of a turnover, off of a muff punt, which again, essentially is a big play for the defense slash special team. So again, I think, you know, big plays, whether for defense, turnovers, takeaways, not giving up big plays, and for offense, not turning the ball over and generating big plays, is going to be, in a large part, key to success at this league. Ryan Helton at That Crazy YM on Twitter asks, I don't have access to the All-22, but I'm curious what Casey was talking to the refs about on the play that knocked him out. Probably the fact that, you know, he got hit by a wide receiver on the sort of a blindside block. I don't think it was a dirty play, but I'm sure Casey in that moment was explaining to the refs that it was a dirty play. So that's my guess. Ryan Grote at X Ryan on Twitter asks, do you think we'll make moves at the trade deadline to pick up some more selections for the upcoming draft? If so, who would other teams actually want from us? I can't imagine anybody wants Vic. No, I do not expect the Falcons to really be active at the trade deadline, at least in terms of selling talent. Maybe they become buyers, but the trade deadline comes after week eight. And I think with this coaching staff slash front office coaching and, you know, front officing for their jobs, they're not going to start selling off some of their best players when they're trying to fight to keep their jobs. So, no. Mantis Toboggan MD at Sebastian's Dad on Twitter asks, what do you think about the fumble stat of us forcing fumbles but failing to recover it? Bad luck or just bad awareness? I think it's bad luck. Turnovers generally are random, so therefore it's more luck than skill when it comes to those things. And then you factor in the fact that a lot of the Falcons forced fumbles tend to occur right along the sideline and they sort of bounce out of bounds. NJ Falcons Ronan at Mave2124 on Twitter asks, what is wrong with the running game? Is the fullback any good? As for the fullback, Keith Smith did struggle in this Texans game. I think he's really only had one good game so far this year against Indianapolis. I think that contributes to the main issue with the running game, which is that the blocking is not good. Not to sit here and blame it on Keith Smith, but the offensive line is not good, and you're not getting great fullback play either. And the tight end blocking, as many of you can know, Luke Stocker is struggling. Austin Hooper hasn't had his best year as a blocker either, but Hooper tends to be very up and down, and usually the last couple of years has started slow and finished stronger in terms of blocking goes. But, you know, I think another factor is the fact that the Falcons are running way more inside zone than they are outside zone. I don't even know if they ran a stretch play at all the entire Texans game, which is the bread and butter play of the outside zone scheme. So I think that's going to be an issue. But I do think, as I explained on yesterday's episode, I do think the Falcons will probably have a little bit more success running the football against Arizona this week, just because Arizona has a bad run defense. And so they should be able to find a lot more room going up against that D-line than they have in some of these recent games. Ryan Grote asked again, do you think it would be smart to draft a running back in rounds 2 through 4 next year? I like Freeman and Ito, but I think we could use a player who could spark the offense a little in the future. You know, I'm never against drafting a good player at any position, but I'm kind of reluctant to draft a running back that high unless he's a particularly dynamic receiving threat like an Alvin Kamara, like a David Johnson, like a Duke Johnson. You know, in my opinion, if you're not getting a guy that's going to give you 500 plus yards receiving a year, then I'm not particularly keen on drafting him in for my particular offense, at least the offense that I would like to run in my head. So I think, you know, Ito has some of that ability. He's probably more a guy that is going to give you 300 plus yards of receiving in a season. So unless the running back that you're drafting is going to be a significant upgrade to Ito in that regard, or can give you Ito's similar value in the passing game, but also sort of give you a high level runner like a Nick Chubb, like a Dalvin Cook type of player, then I'm not going to necessarily be keen on drafting him. I also think, you know, a pick in those middle portions of the rounds is better used on offense, on an offensive lineman, on a tight end or a wide receiver. I think you can get more value there at those spots than you do at a running back, not to mention because you can get capable running backs off the waiver wire. You saw guys like LeSean McCoy and Thomas Rawls and Samaje Perine get part of final cuts this summer. You saw guys like Jay Ajayi and CJ Anderson, Darren Sproles, and Carlos Hyde either go unsigned during free agency this past offseason or get signed for very cheap sort of one-year contracts. So you can find capable running backs off the scrap heap is basically what I'm sitting here saying. So unless you're looking for a Nick Chubb, unless you're looking for a Dalvin Cook, or, you know, wind up going after a Saquon Barkley type of player in the first round, I don't really feel that compelled to use a premium pick on a running back. I feel like you can just kind of roll the dice with some day three options, and then potentially if you still need support and still need help, you can find decent veteran options, you know, off the waiver wire, off the street, essentially. And I think one of the reasons I believe that is because I don't feel like the Falcons need a feature guy. You know, obviously, if you can get a Nick Chubb, if you can get a Dalvin Cook type of player, that would obviously be a good improvement for the Falcons offense. But I think really until Julio Jones really starts to slow down in a major way, I don't feel like the Falcons need that sort of feature back to sort of stabilize their offense. They're going to be a pass-first offense as long as Matt Ryan, as long as Julio Jones, along with Calvin Ridley are capable of playing at a high level, and I think they are, even though they're not right now, and I blame that more in Dirk Cutter than those guys' individual abilities. Running the football is never going to be your bread and butter with those three guys running the show. And given the investment that the Falcons have made with those guys, with the contracts to Ryan, with the contracts to Julio Jones, and the draft pick and Calvin Ridley, say it's a shame to be a finesse team, but be a finesse team, embrace it, and build your offense. You see the Chiefs doing it to a great degree of success in Kansas City. It's not hurting their offense in any way, sort of embracing the finesse mentality. Their hashtag physical, in my opinion, does not work. You know, the last point I will make on that is I do reserve the right to change my opinion based off of who the next Falcons head coach or offensive coordinator is. If we do hire somebody who insists on being that hashtag physical football team, then obviously I'm going to sit here and say, well, in order to make that guy's offense work, you got to invest that high premium pick in a running back. And, you know, speaking on that note, that's something that we're going to talk about in terms of this next segment, with some of the listener questions dealing with sort of the current coaching staff as well as the potential options for the next coaching staff. But before we get there, I want to remind you guys should be checking out a whole host of daily MLB shows like Locked On Braves on the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find them all on your favorite podcast platform, including Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. So at the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time, and watch some football. And whether you're watching Matt Ryan throw dimes or Deion Jones get pick sixes, there's nothing quite like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sports book. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and mybookie.ag is the best in the business. It's where I play, and I think it's where you guys should too. I wouldn't be telling you to bet with them if they weren't the best. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, just like me, you should try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year to do so. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to activate that offer. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to double your first deposit. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So Antoine Smith at FatBoySlim21 on Twitter asks, should the Falcons be looking for an offensive-minded or defensive-minded coach if they move on from Dan Quinn? I like the if, Antoine. I don't really have a strong preference. I think having an offensive mind is a significant advantage in this day and age. And the beauty of having your head coach being an offensive-minded guy is that you're not at risk of losing a good offensive coordinator to another team like 2 years in, like we did with Kyle Shanahan. But it also depends on the candidate. You know, I'm not against hiring a defensive-minded coach. And, you know, for various reasons, you know, being a good play caller doesn't mean that you'll make a good head coach. There are completely different skill sets, which is one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of coaches don't last more than 2 or 3 years in this league, because people think, oh, he's a great offensive coordinator, he'll make a great head coach. And the answer is no. The second thing is, you know, as far as the offensive-minded coaches go, you can argue that the bones of the carcass have been picked clean over the last couple of years. And there are still a few guys out there. But, you know, unless you're landing, you know, that type of guy, say like a Josh McDaniels, you know, I wouldn't necessarily automatically go for an offensive minded coach over a defensive minded coach. You know, and I think, you know, for a lot of cases, whether you're offensive minded or defensive minded, a lot of head coaching success hinges on who your coordinators are going to be, and that applies to both sides of the ball. And so, again, all things being equal, I do think it's a significant advantage to have a good head coach that's ahead of the curve offensively in today's NFL, but that doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to go out there and hire a Pat Shurmur or a Hugh Jackson just because they're offensive-minded. So that's what I will say. Los Falcones at Falcons for Life. G asks, how likely is it at this point, considering how disappointing this team has been this far, that we may finally see Dan Quinn step down slash be replaced before the bye? How about after? Maybe until the season ends, which would be disastrous and unfortunate, question mark. I would say that the odds that Dan Quinn is fired before the bye is low, but if the Falcons get blown out by the Cardinals this week, it wouldn't at all shock me if Dan Quinn isn't allowed to get back on that team playing Monday or Sunday evening. So I think, the bye week is more likely, especially if the Falcons get embarrassed at home against the Rams and or Seahawks. I think if they reach a point where they're like 2-9 or 3-9 or something like that after the bye, then at that point in time, you're talking about a ticking clock of where Dan Quinn's going to eventually get fired. And eventually, essentially you're just waiting for the next embarrassing loss. And then he's probably gone at that point in time. So that's what I would say. Malachi at Mahaffey Malachi on Twitter asks, can we please fire Dan Quinn's bald head immediately? He's got to go today. I think we need to join the wave and hire us a young offensive genius who will be here for decades to come. Give me your honest opinion of Lincoln Riley or luring Kyle away from San Francisco. A, Malachi, bald is beautiful. And B, I honestly don't have a particularly strong opinion of Lincoln Riley. I think he's a very successful college coach. And again, I know it sounds like a cop-out, but if and when the Falcons interview Lincoln Riley in January, then I'll start to really sort of consider him and think about him seriously. But, my sort of thoughts on Lincoln Riley are just my thoughts about any coach trying to transition from college or any coach trying to bring the air raid offense to the NFL, not anything specific to Lincoln Riley. It's the same thing I think about, say, a Cliff Kingsbury or anybody. As far as the air raid translating to the NFL, I don't know if you can operate a pure air raid offense in the NFL at this level, because I think the pass rush is so much better than it is in college, and you'll basically get your quarterback killed if you try to run these five-man protections all the time in the NFL. But I think we've seen teams successfully incorporate air raid principles in their offense. You see Andy Reid doing it in Kansas City. You saw John Morton do it a couple of years ago with the Jets as two good examples. And like any college coach, I think a lot of his success is going to hinge on who he brings along with his coaching staff and his ability to relate to NFL players, certainly better than, say, a Bobby Petrino or Chip Kelly did in previous years. If Lincoln Riley can do those things, then yeah, I think he could be successful, just like I think any coach can be successful at the NFL level. As far as luring Shanahan away from San Francisco, I think if the 49ers make the playoffs, the chances of that happening are very poor. But I'm sure if Arthur Blank was willing to pony up $10 to $12 million a year and make him one of the two or three highest paid coaches in the NFL, I'm sure Kyle Shanahan would, at least his agent certainly, would answer that phone call and say that there would be a possibility there. Our last question comes from Dirty Bird number 2 at Matty MVP Ryan on Twitter. He asks, do you think that Mike Tomlin would make a good head coach for the Falcons if Tomlin was available, assuming Dan Quinn is fired at the end of the season? I feel like Tomlin is very Dan Quinn-esque, and a lot of his success and failure will hinge on who his coordinators are going to be. But I think the one thing you can say positively about Mike Tomlin is that, when you look at the Steelers defense, they've been a lot more disciplined under his watch than the Falcons defense has been under Dan Quinn's watch. And so if you're looking for a Dan Quinn type that can potentially coach up this defense to its full potential, if you're trusting that he'll make a good offensive coordinator hire, and then you couple that with the hope that whoever is the GM of the Falcons, Dimitroff or somebody else, is going to do a better job adding talent in the draft and free agency than, say, the Steelers have done in some of the recent drafts, then I think Mike Tomlin makes perfect sense as a potential hire for the Falcons. Okay, we have one more question from Tracy Edwards at Big Tracy Ed on Twitter. He asks, what would the cap look like if we cut Freeman as well as let go of Sanu, Campbell, and others that haven't moved the needle at the end of their contracts? Let's say you cut Freeman, Sanu, Stocker, Carpenter, Bailey, and Sambrello. Campbell is a free agent, so you don't have to cut him. According to overthecap.com, you're looking at about $10 million in cap space in 2020. And this is one of the reasons why I think the Falcons have to be very proactive and aggressive when it comes to restructuring contracts like Matt Ryan's and Desmond Trufant's before the offseason starts. You could free up to about $20 million in cap space by just restructuring those guys' deals if you do it right. You could probably add another $6 million if you restructure Ricardo Allen's deal, as well as do sort of a quick and dirty extension for Alex Mack that's designed to sort of reduce his contract as well. So I feel like the bottom line of regardless of what the Falcons do, if they don't go into free agency with at least 20 to 25 million in cap space, they're doing it completely wrong. And I feel like if you have 20 to 25 million in cap space, if you know what you're doing when it comes to making some modest budget signings, the Shaq Barrett's and all that type of stuff, then that can go a long way to improving your roster, even if you're not having the $40, $50, $60 million that some other teams are having. So that would be my thing. So when people say like, oh, the Falcons don't have any money, like they do have money. They just have to be better about spending it, and they have to be smarter about creating some of that money moving forward. So there you have it, guys. Appreciate everybody for sending in their questions. Tomorrow we'll have a guest to talk more about this week six matchup with the Arizona Cardinals. A very interesting guest that I think you guys will enjoy having on the show. That's the tease for today. If you want to ask questions on next week's Q&A, of course, you can send those questions in via Twitter to Locked On Falcons. You can send them in via Facebook to Locked On Falcons, as well as send them via email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.